let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America, presented as 73 narrative-style poems, some of which are rhyming and others are in prose or blank verse. Reflections on Mountaineering, a revised and expanded edition, A Journey Through Life as Experienced in the Mountains, summarizes much of what the author, Alan V. Goldman, learned in his more than 30 years of climbing. Many of the same moral issues that confront us in everyday life are present in the high mountains, only to a sharper degree. Alan makes accessible to the general public the otherwise hidden truths that mountaineers often experience. Above all, there is meaning to be found in the very preparation and discipline required for mountaineering, as well as in experiencing the elation of conquest of both the mountains and ourselves. Alan Goldman is a graduate of the Horace Mann School, Harvard College, Harvard Law School. In addition to his mountaineering adventures as his avid avocation, he practiced law for many years, now retired. Alan Goldman, author of Reflections on Mountaineering, A Journey Through Life as Experienced in the Mountains, a revised and expanded edition, is our guest on This Week in America. Alan, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Rick. Thank you for having me.
This is so well done and so many issues to talk about. The time, I'm sure, is going to go by way too quickly here, but give us a little background. How did you become attracted to mountaineering, especially given the academic background that you have and the legal background? How did you get involved in mountaineering?
Well, I had a moment of clarity after college and law school, which was grueling, that I didn't want to spend the rest of my life hunched over a desk.
Yes.
How did a nice Jewish boy from Central Park West get hooked on climbing? I view myself as sort of a portal between that world and this world, you know, the Eastern world. At school, I wasn't a jock. I didn't like organized sports. But I found that I was bursting with energy at the age of 25 in 1982, and I needed to express myself. I needed to find something other than just shepherdizing cases in the law library.
Yes.
I started off by hiking at the Appalachian Mountain Club. We went to the usual places in New York, Harriman State Park, Sterling Forest, Anthony's Nose. And then I discovered skiing, and I went to the usual places in Colorado, Vail, Aspen, Breckenridge, Telluride, all the shishi places, even Stowe in Vermont. But in Colorado, I encountered the phenomenon of what's called the 14ers. Now, what does that mean? There are 54 peaks, summits in Colorado that are over 14,000 feet. And collectively, they're known as the 14ers. And it's become almost a group sport in Colorado to knock them off. And I found, to my pleasant surprise, even though I was no jock, that climbing was something that I could do. With the proper equipment, I had the stamina.
Yes.
And the intelligence, and I was able to function in that environment. So I felt a sense of release. Finally, some activity that I could participate in of a non-traditional intellectual nature.
Well, and you excelled at it. Our guest on the program is Alan V. Goldman. His book is Reflections on Mountaineering, A Journey Through Life as Experienced in the Mountains, a revised and expanded edition. A book available at Amazon, the usual places. Alan's website, an excellent one, is mountainreflections.art. And if you go to our website, you can link onto that, and I'll give that to you throughout the program here. Let's talk a little bit about, and this is so interesting, why you decided to climb, why people climb. And I know one aspect of that is experiencing a sensation called flow. Explain that to us, why you climb and what flow is.
Well, in climbing, you're able to set the terms of your own challenge.
Yes.
Microcosm. And flow is that state of mind where you have three prongs: clear, defined goals, and a way to gauge your progress or not lack of progress towards achieving those goals. Second, and most important, immediate feedback, immediate reward or punishment for your activity. And third, confidence in your perceived ability to carry out your responsibility. They have to be equal. If the ability is less than the responsibility, you experience what sociologists call anomie. You're frightened because you don't feel up to the task. Conversely, if your ability is greater than responsibility, you're bored. You're so-called alienated, alienation, okay, along the lines of, you know, Marx and so forth.
Yes.
The goal, the necessary condition for flow is the balance between ability and responsibility, or at least your perceived balance of it. Now, flow occurs when there's a total immersion, absorption of the person in his activity. I wrote in one of my poems that climbing is an active form of meditation because you're so hyper-focused on your goal. In colloquial terms, everybody knows that in sports, people refer to an athlete as being, quote, in the zone.
In the zone, yes.
When everything comes together, when everything falls into place, flow can exist in many occupations. For instance, a doctor in an operating room who's issuing commands to his subordinates for different instruments, you know, give me a retractor, give me a scalpel, give me this. He's in a state of flow because he's hyper-focused on his activity. He's getting immediate feedback, and he has confidence in what he is doing, and he has clear goals. Now, what does flow do for you? It gives you not a drug high, but a generalized feeling of well-being, a calm exaltation of personal transcendence, a serenity that all's right and well with the world and that you're working in harmony with it. I have a poem that describes some aspects of flow.
Yes, please read that. I think that would really help us understand and give us a sample of what you have, the poetry that you have in your book. And Alan's book is Reflections on Mountaineering, A Journey Through Life as Experienced in the Mountains. If you will, please give us that. This will give us a good idea of flow and mountaineering.
Yes, well, page 16 of the book has a poem called The Power of Now. And page 17 has Our Way to the Top. The Power of Now reads thus: to climb, one must live as though in a state of nature, undistracted by and oblivious of the passage of time. You know that when you're in a state of flow, time seems to run faster. Each moment, each step occurs in the here and now, seared into reality by the intensity of the present. No sense contemplating the past or predicting the future. We climbers experience the entire range of emotion by focusing all of our perception into the present tense of being, transcendent in its splendor. Nothing else can possibly suffice than to endure and celebrate these intense periods of time. For now, we have stepped out of mere time on our own volition and passed into a type of suspended animation, where nothing else counts or occurs in our mind except the next step taken now out of the wake we leave behind us. It attempts to convey the concentration, the focus necessary to achieve flow.
And the way that you present that is very visual. It's very understandable. I can actually see you as you're going through the mountaineering process. I want to ask about translating the feeling that you have, this love, this passion for mountaineering, in the presentation of 73 narrative-style poems. Talk about that, because that's a special talent unto itself, to take these feelings and to convert those, to translate those into poetry as well as you do. Where did this idea and talent come from?
Well, it came from my background in education. I had a broad liberal arts education at Horace Mann and Harvard College, which enabled me to write these pretty poems. And I've combined it with a world where the people who climb in it, you know, can't write a sentence.
yes, exactly.
they try to do their memoirs, but they're, I did this, I did that, I did this, I did that. They don't capture the poetic nature, the metaphysical nature of what they're doing. So I found myself almost uniquely qualified to merge the two parts of these worlds, the aesthetic Eastern Seaboard literary world with poetry. Although my poetry is not esoteric, it's readable. As you said, it's narrative in style. But to merge that, it's accessible to the average reader, to merge that with the truths, the inner truths, metaphysical truths, that are, including flow, that I discovered in the mountains, and bring that back to the Eastern Seaboard community in classical, romantic style poetry.
And you do that so well. You've really accomplished that in bringing this home. It's just, it's beautiful what you're able to do, and the presentation. The book is Reflections on Mountaineering. Alan Goldman is the author. The book's available at Amazon, the usual places, and book availability and much more at Alan's website, which is mountainreflections.art. You can go to our website, link on, and get all of that information. Time going by so quickly. There's so many interesting aspects of this, and the relationship between what you do in mountaineering and how we can transfer some of those processes and use them in real life. You talk about freedom of the hills. What exactly is the freedom of the hills?
Well, traditionally, that's the title of the official or semi-official textbook in the field since 1960. The Freedom of the Hills is what it's called. There's a new edition every 5 years. They're up to like edition 9 or 10. Traditionally, it's meant that to signify that a climber is free to go to areas in the mountain ranges that are denied to others because of the mountaineer's experience and technical know-how and equipment. Beyond that, I contend that there's an internal psychological freedom experienced by mountaineers. It enables you to walk into, you know, a picture postcard. Many mountains, you see them on picture postcards. You never imagine yourself in it. I find that this communion with nature is part of the transcendental, if I can use that overused word, experience. And moreover, the pursuit of happiness, as it's reflected in the Declaration of Independence, is fully fulfilled, that a climber experiences his feelings in touch with the pursuit of happiness through the personal fulfillment of climbing. Lastly, the climber, except for his peers, is free from the judgment of others. The outside world looks upon the climber as some kind of being from Mars, and in wonderment and awe, because they can't contemplate how you can possibly be doing the things you're doing. There's like an invisible curtain between the observer and the observed. And you're part of an in-group when you're climbing. The only people fit to judge you are other climbers. So it gives you a sense of liberation from society at large and belonging to a club. That is the freedom of the hills.
You just, in that presentation, the way you do it, it just makes, I don't even like snow, and I'd like to climb a mountain someday. You have me, it's sort of that challenge there, and what this actually means, and what you go through in preparation and in the actual mountaineering to real life. We're running out of time, and I wonder, do you have another poem you'd like to share with us? I don't want to put you on the spot, but the poems are so well done. Is there anything else you would like to share with us?
Yes, there's another aspect of why people like to climb in addition to flow and the freedom of the hills. It's to leave a part of themselves behind in the history of the mountain, to create meaning out of nothingness. After all, the mountain is just a pile of rocks, snow, and ice. We impart meaning to it by our efforts. And one of my poems, Being and Nothingness, deals with that. On page 2. Here I have talking mountains in my book. This is what I'm talking. A barren yet brazen, bold and beautiful, for you to behold, my summit glistens with morning dew, etched into hoarfrost, cloaking my native peak, and still more with your passing, like a mirage, my summit shimmers with an unearthly refraction, trembling from your evanescent embrace, reflecting your stamp of individuality to create the ultimate existential act of impressing meaning out of nothingness. See the mountain's clouds of clearing haze, as though the mountain's saying, here am I. See how easy it would be to crawl up my highest flanks, to see me in a day, to scale me in a day. Just then, like a woman having temptingly hiked up her skirt only so far and no further, the mountain's pall descends and shrouds it in a whirl of snow, clouds, and ice, covering its summit with the mist of my dreams, as if flirting with me. The vision of wonder is thus withdrawn in a moment of absence and gloom shading my peak. Now the mountain talks. See here, the mountain might say, I was but the quintessence of nothingness until you forced your will upon my blank form, and by your striving imparted meaningfulness to my abidingly neutral presence. Existentialism is something we can't cover in this interview. The heart of it is making choices that make a difference. In my poem, Our Way to the Top, I have a poem that says, I revel in that special quality of the uncertainty of the outcome. That's a big draw in climbing. If you knew what the outcome is going to be, you wouldn't climb.
Yes.
Regardless of skill that is experienced during the bond of indulging ourselves in the useless and dangerous sheer joy of climbing, with the reward for success being achievement of that peculiar harmony of ceaseless flow and feedback of triumph over problems, one after the other. At seriatim, that's the flow issue. Mirabile dictu, that means marvelous to relate. It's the successful process, then, and not the result, that most rewards our efforts, no matter how difficult I have become. Thus, what I am doing, an existential reality where becoming is entangled with being. The experience of competent flow from one problem to the next effectively makes all our actions merge with our self-consciousness, scrambling together our sense of self with our own actions, till it's impossible to conceive of one without the other in juxtaposition. That gives a sense of your communion with nature.
Yes, and you capture that so well. It's just time has gone by so quickly. Hopefully we can do this again. There's so much more. You do such a masterful job, presented as 73 narrative-style poems, some of which are rhyming, others prose or blank verse. Reflections on Mountaineering, a revised and expanded edition, A Journey Through Life as Experienced in the Mountains, summarizes what the author, our guest, Alan Goldman, learned in his more than 30 years of climbing. He shares that so beautifully with all of us. The book is available at Amazon. It's available, and I'll direct you to Alan's website because it's worth the time there, mountainreflections.art. It is so well done. Alan, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. You hit it out of the park with this book. It touches us in so many areas, and like I said, I don't even like snow, and I'd like to go out and try that sometime. You've got me hooked on that from your beautiful descriptions in the book. Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for being with us on the program.
Can I add just one thing?
Sure.
What is the effect of mountaineering on altruism and selfishness? This is a common theme in everyday life. Well, it heightens. Like in military combat, it heightens both selfless actions, incredibly altruistic actions of saving people, and incredibly selfish actions.
Yes.
So experiences are heightened in the mountain. They're not alien to life in the real world.
Well, it's been such a pleasure to have you here and so much to share. The book is Reflections on Mountaineering. You can log onto our website, get all the information. Alan's website is mountainreflections.art. Alan, a pleasure. Thank you for being with us and sharing all your experiences and your emotions on mountaineering with us on the program. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Rick. Appreciate it.
It has been our pleasure. The book is Reflections on Mountaineering. Mountainreflections.art is Alan's website. And, of course, you can get more on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Back on today's program after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.